Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our draft series with the 10 through 1 countdown of the offensive tackles in this draft. Joining me, one of the guys I just love to talk football with, James Ogden. James, how are you doing?
Good, thanks, Ken. How are you?
It needed more than that. You're wearing the right jersey for today, but the Orioles, as we record this, are up 12-2 and have hit 6 home runs, about as good as opening day as you can have. The team record for home runs, the previous record was only 4. So a couple of absolute moonshots by Adley Rutschman in this game, and have been a great up and down the line of kind of contributions to it as well. Tyler O'Neill homered in his 6th consecutive opening day. You're going to know all this by the time you listen to this pod, but we're going to have some great offensive tackle talk for you. James, give us some high-level thoughts on the Ravens' offensive tackle situation from your perspective.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. I started writing, as anyone who's heard me on here before or reads my work will know, I write a draft guide every year that's got a Ravens fan focus to it. And I started writing up reports, and I watch these guys through the college season, but I start writing up reports when we start to get to the off season. And I'm going to have to go back and rewrite some of the summaries on some of the early guys I did because of the Ronnie Stanley re-signing, which I didn't think was going to be a thing that they were going to be able to get done. And and it looks like if he hadn't given them a quite significant hometown discount, it wasn't going to be something that they were going to get done. So I think the situation for me with the Ravens offensive tackle and sort of situation with the draft is that I feel they could take one at any point in the draft, and you can make a case for it, which is why I still think it's probably useful for Ravens fans to be looking at these first round offensive tackles, because I still think there's a chance that they take a guy who could maybe play left guard and kick out later, or a guy that is just an offensive tackle that they're going to let sit for a little bit. I think the situation for me is that you've got a solid starter at the end of his career now in Ronnie Stanley. Obviously, was elite earlier in his career. I think he's fine now. I think where they paid him is exactly where I would have wanted to have paid him in terms of the annual value, in terms of the contract and where it sits in the league. So I'm happy with that. And I think that's what you're going to get. I think with Rosengarten, we saw a guy, I liked him in the draft. I felt that there was some things that he needed to work on, and I saw a lot of progress on that over the course of the year and the things that he needed to work on. And so I feel like he will very quickly be a solid starter if he isn't already. And who knows where that could go. He has the athletic ability to maybe go further. So maybe he's a guy that moves from right to left in the future. I'm not sure. But like at the moment, it feels like they have 2 solid tackles, and maybe we should be on the lookout for another one for a long-term potential replacement for Ronnie.
Yeah, long-term and this year, because right now the Ravens don't really have a backup tackle. Ben Cleveland is a backup at probably 4 positions everywhere but left tackle right now, including center. You know, I mean, he's the new McCary. That's where the Ravens are right now in terms of having backup linemen. So they're going to need to draft some linemen in this draft. They lost both Josh Jones and McCary, both their backup tackles, which is a pretty deep cut to depth they'll have to figure out how to replace. I think that offensive tackle remains a draft priority just for the backup reason, but I think also the Ravens are in a favorable position to take a developmental tackle this year, because they can wait 1 or even 2 years for a guy to grow into his body to become that offensive tackle. Players like Spencer Brown or some of the other small school guys that fit the frame characteristics I'd like to see from an offensive tackle, but otherwise aren't there quite there yet from a functional strength perspective. Are guys you can take a gamble on this year and draft them. You don't want to draft them high, but you know, a fourth round guy maybe that from a small school you can still wait on would be a possibility. And that offensive tackle position, of course, huge barriers to entry, whether it's draft capital, huge amount of payment you'd have on the free agent side of things. It's a very expensive position to try and fill.
100%. I think they've managed it pretty well over previous few years, but having Ronnie Stanley has obviously helped over the course of the last decade. And they do, I feel they do need to get, I think you're right in terms of developmental tackle, or possibly the thing I mentioned around an offensive tackle that can play guard to start with, but maybe has a ceiling of tackle. And there's a few guys in this draft class that you could maybe look at from that perspective, but they do have to start. I think they have to start thinking about it now, but they're also in a unique position, I think, from across the roster that they can look at this first round. And I think their idea was to get into a situation where they can go best player available. And there's a chance that will be a tackle in this draft class where they pick. So it'll be interesting to see how the board plays out.
Yeah. Very, very, very much possible, and also some good combo guys, as you mentioned, some guys who could play guard or tackle. So we'll see how that goes. All right, well, let's jump right into it and start at number 10. You're the guest. Start us off.
So my number 10 guy is Logan Brown out of Kansas. Logan Brown's a really, really interesting case. A guy who went to Wisconsin. Made, I think it was three starts in three years at Wisconsin when he sort of first went over there. And so there's an interesting thing there about how a highly recruited guy ended up only making three starts at Wisconsin in 3 years. He then got dismissed from the team for striking a teammate. And this wasn't some wimpy coach that sort of turfed him out of the team. It was Jim Leonard, who most Ravens fans will hopefully remember from his time playing safety for the Ravens. So this is a no-nonsense guy. And he also, Jim Leonard, decided to go up to the press conference and say Logan Brown didn't enter the transfer portal. He was kicked off the team. So he made a point of telling us that he kicked this guy off the team. So the first thing you have to do with any evaluation of Logan Brown that we're not going to be able to do as outsiders is get comfortable with that, with those concerns there. He then went to Kansas and sort of, I think he suffered a leg injury in his first season and then came back and did pretty much a full season. So he has 1 year of starting experience. The thing I would say about him is he has plenty of, he's very athletic. He's pretty upright in his pass protection, especially when he vertical sets, and he kind of bails out of the kick slide a little bit too early, and he can get caught out when he's directly attacked into his chest. I don't think he resets his feet particularly well, anchors pretty very consistently, and he's quite tight hipped. But I think his explosion and his quickness help him very much, certainly as a second level blocker in terms of as a zone blocker. I think he has all of the raw tools that you want from an offensive tackle. He's a little bit prone to some processing mistakes as well, but he's got he has some ability with his hands. You can see why he was a highly recruited guy. You can, when he on film, you can see what's sort of going on with him. I think, like I said, he has length, he has athleticism, he's got heavy hands, he's got explosive power, and he's pretty good as a zone blocker. So for me, what I think you're going to see is a guy who's a fantastic fit in the Ravens running game as it's starting to evolve. A guy who needs a lot of work still, but he's a one-year starter. I think there's some ceiling there.
A year one starter from college?
He was a one-year starter in college. He is most definitely not a year one starter in the NFL. So I think he's a developmental guy that you don't want to spend too much capital on. I think there may be some teams that take a higher flyer on him than that. So he gets priced out of a kind of a flyer type scenario. But I think he's an interesting guy to take as a developmental prospect, and that's where I am on him. I like the tools, and I like the fact that there might be a ceiling there, but you've got to get comfortable with a lot of issues. And he's also a type 1 diabetic as well, which is another thing.
type 1 diabetic would be about third on my list. I mean, he was in school for six seasons, including, I think, a redshirt year. So he's 24 years old, I think, but I can't find a legitimate age on him. So it's one of these things where his agent has gone out there and done a little scrubbing, probably to make sure that it's not there. Solidly built guy, top to bottom, kind of reminds me of Michael Orr a little bit in that rate, which is good for a tackle, bad for a guard. Obviously, he's going to stay a tackle. He's got the length to play there. Not everybody does in this draft class. That's a real question for some guys. Oftentimes, it's a question a lot of guys move out of left tackle, and it's often length related. But he's close to 34 inches, 33 7/8, so he'll be okay. The Ravens, probably among other teams, will have a bigger problem with the fight with the teammate. And I call it the fight with the teammate, but apparently he struck a teammate. And if he was the only one that was let go, it's probably him that did something stupid there. And Jim Leonard is probably represents the Ravens pretty well in terms of how they would react to the same event. So they're going to have to get comfortable. It was 3 years ago, and hopefully it's something he can provide a reasonable explanation for it. I kind of reminded of a story. Sergio Kindle, when he was drafted by the Ravens, apparently they had the interview with him, and they asked him about, and this is before he fell down the stairs and all that crap happened, but he had actually fleed the scene of an accident, and he had a hit and run on his background. And they asked him about that. And he started to, go up to the chalkboard and, well, here's the car and there's this building over here. And I drove driving down, I hit him and I didn't know what to do. So I just took off. Harbaugh said, the whole description of it was very innocent, but it wasn't innocent at all, kind of thing in terms of what he'd done. And so Logan Brown may or may not really realize, or take responsibility for what he'd done, or realize at least that it can't happen again. So hopefully it's something that he'll get by. I liked him as a pass blocker. I think he allows some cone encroachment, particularly in the Colorado Iowa State games that was not really tagged as pressure by PFF. So I always have. There's a lot of that Ronnie Stanley gives up. By the way, they're much more lenient with Ronnie. I had him as pretty much a C+ offensive tackle this last year, but he gives up a lot of pressure that Lamar is actually very good at dealing with. So he can deal with that slow death pressure, gets in the cone, and then, he's like, no problem. I'll just walk over here and make a big throw. And that could work for Logan Brown as well. So it'd be good. He's got 8 career penalties in 964 college snaps, one every 120.5. Not a great record. Not terrible for an offensive tackle. That total snap count of 964 is 161 snaps per year in his 6-year college career. So that's a problem by itself. In terms of his general blocking characteristics, I think he's slow afoot for pulling. So if he's asked in counters to be the trailing end, I think that could be a problem. A one gap pull, I don't see a problem for him. He likes to finish. I like him on combination blocks. In particular, I think he waits for his, if he's the climber, he waits to see that player get off balance. We're going to talk about that with a few guys, but it'll come up a lot on the IOL conversation. Is there are some guys who have the kind of the Linderbaum technique to it, and that's something I don't really care for. That they just kind of take a single push at the guy to try and get him off that, like hit him once, like it's almost like a chip block, instead of really waiting to feel that defensive tackle is up on one leg, so the other guy can absolutely finish him like nobody's business. And I'll talk a little bit of that on the IOL. I have more to say about the about combination blocking there. I think he's done a good job with maintenance of blocks, and it hasn't resulted in a lot of holding flags. So that's at least a positive thing. He falls on his opponent whenever he gets any kind of a slip or a pancake as a pass blocker. I really like that. I do like to see players finish blocks when they can, but oftentimes just standing over a downed opponent, that's not enough to that they won't get up. And particularly with Lamar Jackson, extended plays that can happen, you want to make sure that guy is down for good, and you want to tire him out. So, give him a good gut punch to the stomach or make him feel your weight on your body is generally a good thing. I do not see lots of alternate flipper pinball with him. Meaning this, that he uses his hands not independently. So when I see that, he's a guy who definitely likes to lock on to his opponent and go for both armpits at the same time. So you probably saw that a fair amount, and he's very effective at it. When he gets the lock on, the rep is over, and he's very effective. And that's true of a lot of the
a bigger guys with reasonable length that they're very good at that. But I much prefer some of the other guys that we'll get to in this draft who use alternate hands, who use a method where they're going for the V of the neck with their left hand and they have a strict control and power hand they're using. I much prefer that. So that's something that we'll see how that plays out. But Logan Brown, I had as number nine on my list. Various risks associated with him that I think you covered very well. Round five, round six is where I'd like to see value for the Ravens. The Ravens don't have a fifth round pick, so they'd have to trade back up to get it. I think it's a little early at the end of the fourth round for his background, age, prospects for being a two contract player, all of that.
Yeah, 100% agree, Ken. I think we see him very similarly. I think he's fifth round would be where I would be comfortable with him as well.
Okay. All right, outstanding. We'll move on to my number 10 guy, who's Gray Zabel of North Dakota State. And this is a really interesting case because I think he's another guy who probably moves to the inside. I left him at here, Frank, in part because it's just a shortage of tackles who have adequate length. And Gray Zabel is 32-inch arms, which are in the sixth percentile. You know my bugaboo about arm length, and I'm not talking to you, James. I'm talking to the general group of people who listen to this show, know how specific I am about the needs for offensive tackle arm length. We did have a show on it just recently that shows just how often left tackles in particular move to other positions in the NFL. It's very commonly arm length related, and I think Zabel probably ends up moving, even though he doesn't really have an ideal body for moving to guard. He's a very, a tall, leaner guy at 6'6", 312. He'll be 23 coming up in a couple of days. So he's one of the older guys in this draft. Does have good explosive jumps and whatnot, but his length is the big drawback. And he started at four different spots across the line. And he'd be a guy, and before we maybe talk about his blocking, I could really see ending up at center in the NFL, be a guy like Christensen or Eichelberger. I always get his name wrong because there's been so many that are they're approximately, but Liam, who plays for Miami. Eichenberg. Yeah. There you go. Who the ex Notre Dame guy who ended up at center as well. So I think that Zabel is a guy who might move. But where do you think he ends up in the NFL before you go too far with this?
Yeah, Ken, he was one of my guys that I would move in. I would move inside. So Zabel, I felt like he's an. I feel like his best fit is at center. One of the things for me with him that I'm a little bit concerned about, I think he has what you need in pass protection to play inside. I liked the timing of his punch. I like the pace, the placement he has. I do also think he's got a really good anchor. So I quite like him in that from that perspective. I felt like the thing that he struggled against was I felt like his outside hand struggled quite a lot against wider aligned rushers coming at him on an angle from the edge, and so that was why I felt like I would have to see him move inside to try and hide that. I generally don't like to make projections from tackle to guard based on from a deficiency standpoint. I don't like to do it to try and hide weaknesses, because most weaknesses that you see will also show up inside as well, and so you can't, I don't think you can always make that projection as easily as some people do. But I think with Zabel, it just was too pronounced, that issue for me was too pronounced to see him outside full time. I think
so. If he moves inside, and okay, I'll go back to Marshall Yanda switching to left guard the one season because he had a problem with his left shoulder, and he continued to play with that. If the problem is truly strength in the left arm, I mean, if it's somehow injury related, maybe you can get by it, or maybe you can overcome it in a year. If it's a natural strength thing, maybe you can strengthen that arm. But if it's an ongoing physical deficit of some sort, then left guard might be the place he'd move. He could move left guard or center, but he really couldn't move to right guard, I wouldn't think, because that's the inside shoulder.
Yeah, I think so. I think it would be crucial for him to be left guard or center, but I think I can see him as a center long term. But I think it's, for me, he was one that I felt more comfortable projecting inside because of that. I do like him. I really like him. I particularly like him in the running game, where I think he's very good, which maybe you'll come on to.
Yeah, I'll go through a few more things. I mean, it certainly improved in his time at North Dakota State. But one question I have is, in the NIL era, how does a guy like this stay 5 years at North Dakota State? I mean, he's got to, if he's a good prospect, Alabama should have been calling him every, you know, couple of months, try to figure out where he was, whether he wanted to move or whatever. Any SEC team would have been probably happy to have the guy. He did have 21 penalties and 2,776 college snaps, 132.2. Since context is really an issue for him, and it's a big issue for anybody who plays FCS ball, you have to look at that as kind of a disappointing number. It would be okay otherwise, particularly if it was a lot of false starts and not too many holding and other, you know, illegal hands to the face, post-snap fouls that cost you more. But in his context, it's in the context he was playing, it's quite disappointing for me. I think he's another guy who plays for lock-ons in pass protection. And so maybe we talk about that a little bit, but he's a guy who goes for, you know, he's not even long for that level of ball, you know, at a 32-inch arms for it, but he plays for that. And he's getting away with it to a certain degree because of the quality of competition he's facing. And he gets plenty of reps where he locks on the guy, it's over, and, you know, you can see plenty of that. But to me, that's something that if he were in a Power 5 conference, he wouldn't probably be getting away with the same technique. He does some other things that aren't perfect. He gets out a little bit over his feet sometimes. I think that would be a bigger issue in terms of a push-pull move from certain, usually not an edge player. It's usually a defensive tackle that will do that to you, but he could be subject to that too. So not perfect by any stretch. Very good chance he moves inside, but I got kind of a thin list of total players that I have on here, and he's my number 10 guy.
Great.
Other comments about him?
I think the thing with me was I know you mentioned before about combination blocks. I really liked him on combination blocks and the way he secured and climbed. Like I felt like his release, the timing of his release to the second level was actually really good. I felt he did position pretty well at the second level. So I quite liked him on combination blocks, I think, which is another thing that, you know, you would like to see in a tackle guard conversion job. I think just the only other thing to mention in terms of his, I think you're right. He's a guy who likes to get latched. I think one thing I did, I'm a guy who does care about arm length. I think it does because it is part of it should be part of the equation, part of the evaluation. But it's, for me, it's one part of the evaluation. And when I see a guy, so one of the things I think with him was you can see on film him lose that initial contact at times because of length. Mm-hmm. And that he then gets a bit in trouble from that perspective. So that was another reason why I felt moving him inside would be better. But I totally get your sort of thin list. I mean, I've been looking for these guys. I've been watching a lot of tackle tape, and you know, if you watch enough Holland Pierce's, you start to find
yeah, there you go
challenges. So, <Yeah.
laughs> and he's, you know, he's on the honorable mention list.
So I don't mind Holland Pierce actually. Yeah, I'm being a bit because he's the most extreme version of it, isn't he? Yeah.
There you go. So. Okay, so he was my number 10 guy. We already mentioned my number 9 guy is Logan Brown. So who's your number 9 guy?
So my number 9 guy is Ozzie Trapillo out of Boston College. Really weird shaped guy. So Ozzie Trapillo is, for anybody who doesn't know, 6'8". You can't miss him on the film. You switch it on and you're going to be immediately, oh, that's the guy I'm looking for. But he has 33-inch arms. So it's a strange sort of dimension guy. And so that could be an issue. And I think so he is just ridiculously tall. And it could be a natural disadvantage for him. But I feel he plays with quite good bend, actually, and looks quite easy bend. And it does help him to maximize his play strength, specifically in pass protection. I think with a good plan, you can get into his chest. But I do see him reset and re-anchor when he's challenged with power moves. I think elite competition with really effective speed to power moves will put him in trouble. And because you just, with a good plan, you just can get into that 6'8" chest and give him some trouble. But it's rarer on film than I expected it to be that he gets beat like that. I thought I'd see that quite a lot in the same way we sort of saw Alejandro Villanueva get beat here in Baltimore for a while. I think one of the other reasons why he doesn't get beat as much is he's really skilled with his hands. I felt he had really excellent timing and placement with his hands. He also, I feel he works really well with independent hands, as you mentioned before. Mm-hmm. But I like the way he changes up and has a two-handed strike and doesn't overuse it, but it's quite effective when he does. And he's particularly skilled with his inside hand. And that's something that you see, I think, you know, Pat McCary at times had serviceable games off at right tackle for the Ravens because he's very skilled at using his inside hand, which when you have shorter arms is one of the ways in which you can negate it because your inside hand is closer to the defensive lineman. And so you're able to if you can place that well and have enough power in it, then it can be a useful ally to sort of negate some of your length issues. I don't think he maintains his leverage as well when he's run blocking. And so he isn't able to consistently finish at all. He goes chasing defenders. He's overbalanced in the run game. And so you struggle to see some finish. But he's a competitor. He does compete in the run game. And I do see some power to him when he's able to exert leverage. But it, like I said, it is a little bit rare. So for me, I think the key with Trapillo is he's also, again, I put him in the same sort of phase as Logan Brown. It's a different... there's a different sort of development arc you're having to take with Trapillo than you are with Brown, but it's a similar sort of curve that he's going to have to scale, I think. I think he has the tools to succeed with the shorter arm length, which is which I like in terms of his hand usage. I do think that the Ravens do like technically sound offensive linemen, and that's what Trapillo is for me. Just limited by his... by his athleticism to an extent, and also his arm length. I think the only thing I would say is I do think he's a right tackle only. If you take Trapillo, you're as the Ravens, you're taking a bit of a gamble on if he's the developmental tackle that you put in the school to get him to where he needs to be, you are gambling on Rosengarten being able to make the switch to the left side, because he's not necessarily going to be a guy. I don't think he's a guy who can play on the left side in the NFL.
Completely agree. And that is one of the real key things the Ravens have to decide, whoever they draft, is are they willing to make that gamble on Rosengarten? And they did themselves a disservice in a certain sense. It certainly was the right thing to do in his rookie year, but they didn't learn as much as they could have about Rosengarten in terms of evaluation with all the help they gave him on that side. And very much reminded me of the first half in 2018 for James Hurst, where they put him out at right tackle. They gave him tons of help, and they were able to get a serviceable half season out of there while they were waiting for Orlando Brown to be ready. I'll use in quotes. It seemed very funny to me that he was sitting for any reason, but I think that's kind of what happened with Rosengarten. And not that it didn't overall perform very well, because if you look around the league at all those left tackles who were drafted, all those tackles who were drafted, a bunch of disasters, a bunch of train wrecks, and a bunch of players who didn't play as well as Rosengarten as well. He's one of the guys who probably was the second best after Joe Alt among all the tackles drafted, which is really remarkable. When you get to it, go back to Trapillo for a second, because he's a guy I spent some time on. Plus athletic testing across the board, shuttle, broad, three cone are all okay. 5.21 in the 40 for a guy his size is okay. He definitely is not, his play speed is not quite as fast as that, particularly in the run game. And there may be some decisiveness issues that I'll get into. 5 penalties in 2,349 college snaps. It's 1/469.8. That's very good. He's the son, by the way, of a former Boston College guard, Steve Trapillo, who also played in the NFL with the Saints for a number of years. Football lifer here. So, you're buying into the Alomar family in baseball or something like that. This is a guy who grew up learning how to play offensive line right from his dad. So, that's certainly a big positive there. And by the way, Steve Trapillo was second team All-American in 1986. So he wasn't a no account lineman. He was a guy who belonged in the NFL. Didn't just get there, on the fringe for years. As a pass blocker, I think the bull rush absorption is the first thing that that steps out. He's very good. He has a little bit of reverse C in his back, not as much as you see in some smaller players or some guards, but he does a good job absorbing it. Good kick slide, makes up for a lack of quickness. I don't think he's the guy you want your feet on the left side to do that. He's pretty good, and this is something important for right tackles. I go back to Rick Wagner had this, but he's good at converting to a 12-6 blocking style once he's beaten to the outside, which you need to have that if you're an edge who's at all slow in foot or has any problem mirroring. You better be able to use your length, whatever it might be, to try and your size to push that guy south of the pocket. So you're moving him around the face of the clock, 12-6. And you've heard me use, I'm sure, that term before on the show. Likes to use his hands to lock on. That's true of all bigger guys and all like not great mirror guys. I think one of the things I really liked, and this has got to be from his dad, is a very solid ability to maintain relative depth with the right guard. So, if you're going to make stunts and twists, those handoffs and make them work, you have to have good relative depth to the guy next to you. And so that's clearly something that he was able to maintain. Doesn't have that top shelf athleticism you'd like to say, but he does have the size. There's a little bit of a Daniel Falele. Look like this. He's way ahead of Daniel Falele in terms of his technical understanding of what he needs to do on a football field. And some of that's good and some of that's bad. Falele is a much larger man still than Trapillo, but he is a guy who also does not know all the nuances of playing guard in the league, let alone tackle. And Trapillo, I think probably could play either. I think you could put him at right guard as well. Particularly if you wanted to open the front gate with a bigger man and have somebody who could pivot for you. I think he could do that. I think the consistent theme about him as a blocker at right tackle is it's a long way around him. And you talked about the getting into the body thing. He was very effective, I thought, when he had his arms out, obviously, and this is what all tackles try and do. They try and at least get a hand on you so they can kind of measure you out for what their next move is and slow you slightly as you react to what they're trying to do. And it effectively extends how far it is around that player. So he's already kind of a mammoth human being, and this adds more length to any arc that player needs to travel on, which I think is good. And he's much further ahead as a pass blocker than he is as a run blocker, where I have a few complaints. Slow-footedness, don't think we need to overemphasize that. You clearly hit on that. He has some natural power. I think he continually looks for the next target. So one thing about him is, this comes from his dad, is he's a guy who's going to pick up one triple for a season. If you look on his highlights, he has a lot of very good two block combinations where the second one wasn't easy. And sometimes it's two blocks in level two when he's moving there and he becomes finished with a guy and then goes on. It's a different kind of talent, because if the first choice you want to make when you make a level two block is probably put that guy on the ground, then your next thing is fall on top of him. And if you really want to finish guys, you do that. Ronnie Stanley has some ability to get triples. Marshall Yanda got an occasional one because they throw a guy out of the play. They know he's gone and they move on. And Trapillo has some of that. So that was something nice to see. I think that he's pretty good when the defender makes a misstep, particularly in terms of trying to get around him somehow, at taking advantage of that. So I was excited to see that. I think that's something that the Ravens could certainly use. I think he climbs reasonably well. He has some nice single gap pulls to the outside. I wouldn't want him pulling the long way, but if he's pulling from right to right, which is usually a single gap around the tight end, I think he was fine with that. If you look at the Virginia game, there's several of those. They must have had some sort of a scheme thing, but you can see some of those. Like most bigger men, he's kind of lungy in space. It's something that, you just hope linemen can use their size effectively. He's got it. He's got all the size in the world to be a human obstacle to people. Just make yourself a traffic cone. It's not a unmanly thing to do to not make contact. It's very manly to continually be stepping in the line of most direct access from the safety of the cornerback who might otherwise be making that tackle. So anyway, I'd like to see a little bit less of that, but smart player. I think the Ravens probably love this guy. I would be shocked if some guy doesn't have a red star among the scouts on Trapillo based on what I've seen. could be good value at number 91. I would not be upset if they draft him. He'd be unbelievably great value at 129, but I think he'll be long gone. So if we're talking about where the Ravens are drafting this guy, by the way, number 8 on my list, I think. Number 8 or number 7, one of the two. Give me a second here. I got 10 pages of notes with this. Yeah, number 8 on my list. But where would you be happy drafting him?
I think I feel similarly to you. I think end of the third would be a little too early for me, just with the concerns in the run game. So end of the third would be a bit too early for me. But I agree with you that I think at the end of the fourth, you're looking at pretty good value, very good value there. But I also agree with you that I don't think he's going to be there. I think there are too many teams that are going to like him and get him in. I actually think he would be useful for the Ravens out of the gate as the sort of as a backup tackle. Like, I think there's a potential there because of how technically proficient he is. And I think the problem is that value that the Ravens will see, someone else is going to see that too. And so I think there's a really good chance that he'll be gone on day two at some point. I'm with you pretty much. I think just, we probably have him slightly, from a rankings perspective, we definitely have him slightly less. And I think we probably have a slightly less, I probably have a slightly less idea of his value, but not very much.
Okay. All right, let's hear about, let's see, he's my number 8 guy, but we didn't go to your number 8 guy who will be next.
No, did we do your number 9 guy? Who was your number 9 guy?
Logan Brown was your 10 guy.
Okay, yeah. So my number 8 guy, I don't feel particularly good about, and I really did not know where to slot him. So it's Emory Jones Jr. out of LSU. Mm-hmm. I'll mention it within the evaluation, which is why I'm not 100% about him being where he is in my list, but I had to put him somewhere, and there is a lot of potential there with Emory Jones Jr. What I would say first of all is the scheme at LSU, which is something that we can talk about with Will Campbell as well. The scheme at LSU put him in some difficult situations. And so it wasn't an easy place to be a pass protector, I don't think. Some things in my notes. So I think he's way too upright when he's blocking at the second level. He does not come under control to fit the block particularly well at the second level. If we're talking about, sorry, this isn't particularly much in a sensible order. I think he can use his length pretty well to combat edge rushers who are trying his outside with a cross chop or a similar move. So I like the way he deploys his length on the outside. This is a guy who is over 34 inch arms in this draft class. I don't think he has the most efficient feet in vertical sets. And I think I'll talk about that a little bit more in a second, but he can use his hands to help negate it, but I'm worried about his feet, which I'll mention, as I said, in a second. He does struggle in obvious passing situations when he's facing edge rushers who get off the ball quickly and attack him with speed upfield. And it's the thing that I'm most worried about in terms of his evaluation. I think he's got a nasty demeanor. I really like how competitive he is. He will finish blocks through the echo of the whistle. He drives guys into the ground. You can see it on film quite regularly. I think he's pretty good with his hip mobility. So I think he moves to open up to inside moves pretty well and can redirect when he needs to. I think he's very good with independent hands. I think he changes up his strategy and wins against different types of moves and different types of edge rushers with a good plan and good hand usage themselves. You'll hear me talk a lot when I go through my evaluation about, like, I like to look at the competition that they're facing and sort of, I think that's an important context to the evaluation. And I like the way he works against guys with a good plan. I think he's, in terms of from a run blocking perspective, I think on gap blocks, in closer quarters, I think he gets his hands on and finishes, despite his footwork being a little bit less than perfect. But I also think he's a bit cumbersome in space when you're asking him to do some stuff in space, when he isn't moving in a straight line, when he can't get an angle on a guy. And I do think he sort of struggles to position a little bit when he's pulling. So there's lots of sort of bits in there in that evaluation. I think the main thing I would say about it is that I think the reason why I don't feel comfortable about him at eight, but I feel like the ceiling is pretty high, is that I think his footwork could be a problem that he never gets over, and it should cloud any evaluation of him. When, like I said, when he's challenged with good speed or good get off, he really starts to lose battles upfield. His long arms give him a lot of margin for error, and he's good with his hands. He's good technically, but he just, there is that problem with his footwork that I don't know that it's a tough thing to teach people to have efficient footwork at the offensive tackle position. Like, it's not a quick fit. Like Roger Rosengar's main issue coming out of college for me was that he wasn't selecting the right strategy at the right time to take on different edge rushers. You can teach someone strategy. You can teach someone tactics. Teaching someone something that is more muscle memory is a very different ball game. And so I worry about that with him. If you can get more efficiency into his footwork, I think he could become a solid pass protector and therefore a middling starter in the league. But I feel like that's quite a big if, is my concern. It's quite a big if. You're sort of gambling on a lot of potential there. I've mentioned about gap blocks and space blocking. I think he definitely benefits from a redshirt year, giving him some time to develop and trying to get him better in terms of his footwork. There's a lot of room there to grow. I don't know what I feel I wouldn't spend more than a third round pick on him. So
if you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small farm American cannabis. So you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies. And let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Ravens perspective, I can't justify spending the late second on him. So you'd have to want him to drop to the late third, and then I'd also want to see the board at that point and what else is available. So I don't know that he ever gets there, if he ever gets to the Ravens, but he's a guy who is potentially worth the gamble if you can fix what is quite a big issue, I think, in terms of his footwork.
All right, fair enough. I have him as 14th on my list, so he didn't make it. He's on the honorable mention list again. It's kind of a thin list in terms of who's available, and there's some guys in there that aren't necessarily going to end up. He is one of the guys I think actually has a pretty good chance to move into guard. Not a sure thing, but if his footwork continues to be a problem, and I would agree with that part, that's the big bugaboo is he going to have a good enough mirror? And then can he convert to be a 12 to 6 blocker? And while as Trapillo, I think, has a lot of natural ability to do that and a lot of technical proficiency at doing it, I think Emory Jones has a lot to learn there. He also has a very much a pear shape. So you look at the guy on film, he's not a Michael Orr up and down kind of a linear athlete or what you expect maybe from a tackle normally, Ronnie Stanley. He's a guy who's got more sand in his pants. He's a little bit slower afoot, but I think he'd make a perfect right guard. I think you put him in there. He's got the long arms to control the pivot. I think he'd be good there. I have only one differentiation, but I have a feeling because we look at things very similar that we're going to come up a lot of the things. I really am not all that impressed with his alternating strikes, his hand usage in terms of mixing it up. I saw good violence in his hands, but I thought a lot of it was two-handed flipper play, and that was kind of one of the bugaboos about playing right tackle. I probably hate it less at guard. But when I see it at tackle, I really don't like it because you need to, that pass rusher's got a plan against you and you need to have something to counter his counter moves. So we'll take a brief stroll down this because John, you're one of the best people to talk to about this is that all pass rush moves are either a full man move, which is really the bull rush. You're going directly into your opponent, or they're half man moves that then have a conversion to the continuation on that side or a switch to the other. And when that pass rusher has a plan to either get to your body and spin, or they want to get to your outside and then they maybe want to rip past you or cross chop past you, or do whatever, like Euro step to go back to the inside, whatever they do, you need to have a counter move in it. And usually it is an independent arm movement of some sort that you have to execute, a punch of some sort to either slow him down or stop him. There's very little you can generally do with your feet to react quickly enough to these one side, other side move, or even, you know, to moves where they continue on the same side to beat you with speed, beat you with cross chop, beat you with a dip. You need to be able to quickly go to that 12-6 blocking, oftentimes to bail yourself out of such situations. So with him, that was a bugaboo for me. I agree with you on the bend. Not a great natural mirror. You've covered to a good extent. He's also, I don't think he was his natural kicking out, which is something I don't think the Ravens would like. So not a guy who in the run game is all that comfortable going out into space with a player and getting that kick out block made. If he's locked on, no problem. But if he has to actually go after someone to do that, it's more difficult and kind of lungy in space. The combination blocks he's got are really good. There's a lot of down blocking that occurs, and they're really good from a highlight perspective. Let's put it that way. He may be a player, and we've accused some players already of being kind of punchy as they release to climb. I think he almost wants to stay on that combination block too long a lot of times to finish it. And that's not really the goal. Get the guy up on one foot. Let the back guy finish him. Let him get the highlight, and you move to level 2. His penalty rate was a little high, but given the SEC context, I was okay. One penalty every 136.6 snaps. The redshirt year is a big point because he really needs more functional strength. But in his case, it's a matter of two things. He would need functional strength, and he'd also need to improve his technique to be a better right tackle. Developmental lineman, the Ravens are a team that can take a chance on him. But I think, to me, he's a guy you want in round 4 or round 5. But last pick in round 4, I'd be fine with. He might not last that long. And you know, if that goes, you shrug your shoulders and you go, okay, not my problem. I didn't make that drafting mistake on him, or at least that's the way you hope it ends up being correct. But if they got him with a late 4th round pick, then I'd be excited about the developmental prospects too, I think. And you can wait a year and not be too concerned about the draft capital expended to do so.
Yeah, I'm there too.
All right. Outstanding. Let's see. So we already did where are we now? We already did your number 7 guy is up next.
Who was your number 8?
My number 8 was Trippulo.
Trippulo.
You were one step ahead of me the whole way.
Yeah. So my number 7 guy, and I suppose it'll be a little bit controversial for some people, I suppose, is Josh Connolly out of Oregon. So I have him a bit lower than I think other people do. If you just bear with me a second while I get to my notes,
including me, by the way, if you've got him at number 7, so this is gonna be a good discussion.
So Connolly is an interesting one for me. I do like him. I think this is the sort of cutoff where we get to guys who I do like. Like we're splitting hairs a little bit here now. I think these seven upwards are guys that I would be comfortable with in the top two rounds for the Ravens. So like we're into the guys who I do actually like. So with Josh Connelly, I think the first thing I think so let me give you sort of an overall to start with, which is that I think he's above average playing the position in college. I think against most competition, he looks solid. But my concern was when he faced more NFL caliber edge rushers. And so I'm now looking at a guy, with Connelly where he's got the physical tools that I expect to potentially play offensive tackle in the league. So now I want to see him against NFL level competition. I felt he struggled a bit against Abdul Carter, and I felt he struggled against the one that sort of turned me a little bit on him was JT Tuimoloau at Ohio State. And I think he was quite it was instructive to see what he needs to do from a development perspective for the next level. I think what I felt watching him was that I think he against most competition, he really maintains his composure and his technique in pass protection. He's got good footwork. I think he's got a solid punch that he can maintain. I think he's generally better when he's not facing a really wide alignment from the edge rusher and can get his hands on more quickly in jump sets. But when he faces a defender who has a good plan and processes the game at the high level, I think that defender and Tuimoloau did this a lot, can get him to commit his hands and lunge and overbalance. And so they're then able most rushers with that kind of plan are then able to counter off that quite effectively. And so there are instances on film where I saw defenders with that were more in the kind of NFL level talent category could beat him across a cluster of plays with the same tactic and he couldn't adjust, he couldn't get it done quickly enough, especially when he's facing a power rusher who comes at him with a bull rush or a long arm move or converting speed to power. I think he's going to give up pressure towards the quarterback. I did like that he was able to reset and stalemate, and I think you saw that a decent amount. So that was pretty good. But when he's facing a rusher, a more power rusher with a really good plan and who is intelligent, or when he's facing a rusher with elite speed off the edge, I think his normally good footwork and hand usage that you see kind of deserts him a little bit. And he sort of picks up his feet a bit in his kick slide and just gives away all of his play strength a little bit. So for me, what I'm always looking for when I'm evaluating players is I'm looking for, okay, this isn't consistent. Why isn't it consistent? And that was what I picked up on there, I think, was the competition. I think he's a good mover. I think you can see him fit and finish at the second level, which I really like. I think it's most consistent when you see him releasing to the second level. I think he pops. He's probably a bit of a one popper, but he does pop pretty well at the line of scrimmage in terms of popping that defender. I think he's quick in short areas, position quickly for high degree of difficulty reach blocks where he's blocking guys aligned well inside of his position. When he reacts in space, he's less consistent against quicker defenders, but nothing that I would be particularly writing home about. I do think he also fits blocks well as a gap blocker, but I think his finish is a bit more inconsistent in that area. I think given his length, his athleticism, and all of the things you can see quite regularly on film, I do like him as a potential left tackle prospect. My issue is when he allows those power rushes with a good plan to start to either allow pressure into the quarterback, or they can counter off moves and get home, or when he's facing that elite speed off the edge. So I think there's enough there to work with, and I think the developmental issue there is not something that's a Like, it's not a like, I think it's eminently fixable. So perhaps I'm being a little bit harsh with where he is. And I do like him a lot. There are a lot of athletic tools that I like with him, and there are lots of things I like. I've sort of focused on some of the elements that, because I know I'm a little bit lower on him, so I focused on the elements that I don't like. But there's lots of things I do like about him, and I do think he's a potential starting tackle in the league.
All right. All right. I think he'll stick at left tackle too, despite a little bit of deficit there in arm length at 33.5. I think he'll overcome that. His polish has grown over the years. If I had a concern about him to any great degree, it would be about how polished he is relative to what eventual ceiling he has, because it does seem like he's grown a lot, whereas some of the other guys still have a lot to learn, and that's you know, potential gain from the time you draft him. Cut his penalties from 8 to 4, a solid career rate of 1 every 165.3. Nothing great, nothing terrible, but that's okay. You mentioned the Abdul Carter game. I thought he played very well against Abdul Carter in the Big Ten championship game. But then he had difficulty with the OSU edges, and Tui was one of them. If you're going to lose to an edge and have several of those occur, a player like that, who at least is NFL ready, like Tui, is a good guy to lose. For Carter, for that matter, would be too. I thought I did see him give up some cone intrusion with Carter, but I thought he generally played pretty well. I mean, the pressures he had weren't get the hand on the quarterback pressures. At least if I'm remembering the correct game, that's the case. He played well in that game. Decent bend. He attacks with his arms, you know, basically stays over his own feet. Doesn't get out in front of them. Tui is a slippery cat. And he is active trying to disengage on every play, but he's still got him locked out on a number of plays. Now, you want to see that. You also want to see how he got there. Did he go there just by two-handed jabs right to the thing? And is it something, you know, he's going fishing and he can make that happen 10% of the time, but he actually needs to win 97 or 98% of his reps to be an effective left tackle in the NFL. Can he keep up enough of that rep to do it? I thought I saw good things from that, and especially dealing with the Tui, who's very slippery. He was able to combine that with some 12-6 blocking to take care of him when needed. But Tui did have a good game against him. There's no two ways about it. Hand usage involved separate flippers, and I like that. As we've talked about from a number of places, I don't see a problem where he's going to a two-handed strike you know, with such regularity that somebody figures it out. Another thing I really like is the inside-out processing, where he begins with processing from protecting the left B gap, and you often see him put his right arm up there first. That's generally that happens. That left tackle is not thinking, how do I stop this guy? How do I stop this guy? How do I stop this guy? The guy right in front of me. He's worried about line integrity and how he might have to pick up a blitz or a stunt if somebody crosses his face or the guard's face and they have to make an exchange. So he's kind of measuring it out oftentimes with his hands and even sometimes trying to figure out what's happening with that guard without looking that way. So sometimes the sets won't allow for that kind of thing, but it's a nice thing to see. It's actually another guy I remember seeing at very regularly at the college level was the right guard play of Ben Cleveland, was an inside out processor who that's one of the reasons I really liked him was he had that. So Connerly has some of that, and that's positive. I think he's a polished technique player, as we mentioned. I think he keeps his feet well in space. So if you watch a wide receiver block on a run play, you'll typically see a guy who runs into level two and is much more concerned about pivoting, and wide receivers don't tend to be lungy in space because, first of all, they don't have enough mass oftentimes to make a lunging hit completely redirect the player from making a tackle. So instead, they reposition themselves, keep a player at arm's length. And Miles Boykin, great recent blocker for the Ravens in terms of the run game. Tylan Wallace has this to a degree too, but he has to be feisty doing it. But they position themselves and they're constantly pivoting relative to the spot of the running back. I think Connerly does that better. That's one of the reasons why I like him from a run back blocking perspective in that case as well. So despite the frame and the lack of ability to get displacement in the run game, which that's really not his game at all at 6'5", 311, he's a relatively lean frame guy. I think he's someone who can develop in the NFL weight room to be a little bit more powerful and functionally strong. And I think he's one of the players who the Ravens would not be a complete reach at 27. I hope they have better options, but I don't think he'd be a complete reach. And he's one of those guys who falls right on that 1-2 border. And if the Ravens got him, I wouldn't be saying, oh, crap. I'd be probably okay with it. I would rather they trade back and get him at about number 35 or 38. But, you know, life hits you as it does, and they might not be able to trade that pick. And they may decide this is the best combination of need and value we have at 27. And if they did, it probably means the Ravens like something about him that the two of us couldn't necessarily agree on directly about what they about who he is as a player. Anyway, my number four guy overall.
Cool. I think that's the thing for me. I think the slight nuance between, because I think here we are starting to get into sort of, well, for me, we're getting into sort of splitting hairs territory a little bit in terms of like how much we like a guy. But I think seven for me sort of tells you that I wouldn't be okay with him at the end of the first. I would be more happy with him as with a trade back. But I think for me, it would more be sort of he's never going to get there, but the value for me is not going to be 59. It's going to be a little bit up from 59, probably with a bit of a trade up from 59, I think would be there. If you started to see him falling into the second round, go up and grab him, go up a few spots and grab him. That's where I would be with him. But I completely agree with you in terms of the positives to him. I think I think they're going to like him from a run perspective, from a running game perspective, because like you, I think at the moment, I don't see lots in terms of his ability as a gap blocker, but I do think in an NFL weight room, he gets there. And I think he's got the technical ability to do it. And then I do really like him at the second level. So I think the Ravens are going to like him as a nice fit in their what is now quite a diverse and multiple running scheme. I think they're going to like him from that perspective and then see something from a tackle development perspective. And I think you make a great point as well about to him allow that this, like it's such a, he's a pro rusher already. And so, you know, he's losing reps against him. And I agree with you. I felt like he did have plenty of good reps against him. But I think, you know, you're absolutely right. Losing against a guy like him is one way you sort of say, okay, that's something that we maybe can fix in the long term.
Yeah. Let me put a frame on that. I mean, last year in the championship game, Rosengarten was playing against a bunch of seventh round guys and a bunch of guys who, you know, hanging on at the fringe of the NFL. And he was losing reps to them. He had a really tough game as a pass blocker. It's hard for me to beat on, you know, a player like Connerly for losing some reps to an NFL ready, you know, second round, probably for Tui. Would you say second round?
I think I like him second round. I like him probably more than others, but I do think he's a second round pick.
So anyway, there's losing reps. There's losing reps. We got to move on here because we're running. I knew this would happen. I knew this would happen because I love talking football with James and go so deep into this. I'll go to my number seven guy, who is Jonah Savainaya of Arizona. I've evaluated him at offensive tackle. He's a guy I think will probably move to guard in the NFL. He is the sixth Savainaya to play in college football of the PFF era, which is really surprising. But I looked at it. There's six of them listed, and they may all be related, or it may be a more common name. It may be like Jones or Smith over there. Let me get to them here. So a few things about him. First of all, 4.95 in the 40 is lightning quick for a tackle. So he's got that going for him. Athleticism is generally outstanding overall. He had five penalties in 2,418 college snaps. That's one every 483.6. That is the best of the offensive tackles. So big positive there, by the way. And if you're looking at PFF grades and you're trying to figure out, is this okay? Does this make sense? First of all, I tell you, do as much as you can just watching the film yourself. But PFF does a really good job of capturing every single snap. The problem is the weightings. So PFF and I watch the game the same way. We're watching for the same things. We have the same view of what is a positive thing and what is a negative thing. It's just we have a different view of how positive and how negative those individual events are. And PFF really under penalizes for penalties within their rating system. And so it's one of the things. I know they want to come up with a way to fix it. Mine is extremely punitive on penalties. I've even reduced it slightly. But every way I look at this, I come up with the same situation, is that penalties are critically important. Usually there's the singular problem of the player who caused them, whereas a offsetting gain, it has multiple people claiming credit for that play, as most football plays do. So anyway, the low penalty total is a very big positive for Jonah. He's a pass blocker. I think he's a plus guy on stunt and twist pickups. They were good. Reasonably fast kick step, I thought, gives him a chance to stick at left tackle. It definitely does not have an A mirror. And if he's going to stick at left tackle, he's got to combine that with two things. First of all, get that first step as solidly out there as possible. That means as far, maintaining your good base, and be able to react after that. Usually that means a lot of 12 to 6 work he's going to have to do. And that would best be handled on the right side, but I still think he has a chance to stick on the left. He can use his hands independently. I'll let you speak to that more. He does get pushed around by bull rushers. So he's already had a problem, even at 324 pounds, even with decent length at 33 7/8, that people are getting to his chest and they're still pushing him. That usually, when I see that, that's usually a case of playing too high. Push-pull moves are almost always a case of guys flopping on the ground all the time. It's usually he's over his feet, he's getting pulled to the ground. If a guy's getting beat on the bull rush with any degree of regularity, it's usually he's playing too high. He's not bending in the right place. So that's a problem. He's a little bit slow to protect the edge, which leads to, and counterintuitively, that leads to a problem inside, because he overreacts to an outside move. So you have a guy who is so dependent on stopping speed, he makes his first step and he overreacts to the outside. I used to say that about Adafi Owe, is he'll be a better athlete than any left tackle he faces. And so he needs to feed off that overreaction. Well, that's kind of what opposing edge rushers can do with Saba Inaya. And that's been a problem for him. In terms of run blocking, he's a big impact down blocker. Needs to make sure he's not leaving too late, but I don't think that he can't coach that out of him. He maintains his feet very well in level two, which is something I really like to see in a run blocker. And I think he's done a very good job of getting to the spot in the screen game. A lot of tackles, they get out in front of a screen play and they really can't do anything but end up lunging because they can't line up their guy. They're not a guided missile. They're a brainless missile kind of in space, trying to deal with a corner or a safety or whatever, a quicker player, and they have a hard time lining them up. But I think at the best he stays at left tackle or perhaps right tackle due to the mirroring issues. But if he were rated at guard, where I think he could move, I think the chance is probably 50% or more, he would rate very highly among the guards in this class. So it wouldn't even be a question, but I have him as my 7th ranked offensive tackle.
Thanks, guy. So I'm right. So he's my 6th ranked guy.
Okay, great.
So that's really good. You're ahead of me now. So I think, so for me, there's a really interesting thing with Saba Inaya that I'm glad you mentioned. You left the independent hand usage for me, because what I saw with him was I felt like I watched him at right tackle first and thought he's really overusing his outside hand, and it gave some of those issues where he's oversetting and allowing those inside moves. And his outside strike was good; it was good, but it didn't seem the right. He used it so often, and it just felt like the wrong thing. And it felt like rushers started to target it as well because they knew it was coming. He just kept using that outside hand, and then I saw the game where he moves to left tackle. And so he moves to left tackle. And when he moves over across to the left side, you see him start to use his inside hand. And so I thought that was really interesting that he moved from right to left in a game. And he was using the outside strike predominantly on the right side. When he moved to the left side, he started to use the inside strike. And so this was really strange. I thought,
it's not a hand.
Exactly. So it was not strategy at all. It's his dominant hand. And the challenge for me is what ended up happening then was he wasn't as used to using his inside hand and using that technique. So it didn't look quite as dominant. So when he landed his outside strike, it looked really good. He's got great power, great accuracy in that hand. It looked good. He didn't land it as frequently when he was on the left side, but his overall pass protection sort of house just looked better put together on the left-hand side because he was using his inside hand, pushing people up the arc to where his strength is, which was undoubtedly his footwork, tracing the arc. It also meant he reacted to, I felt it meant he reacted to inside moves a little bit better, not perfectly, but a bit better. So I felt like,
well, on the right side, he was better at reacting to the inside move.
No, I felt on the left side, he was better at reacting to the inside move. Because generally, he looked better. I think generally you could isolate reps on the right side where it looked a lot better. But on the left side, it just felt like he had, even though sometimes the results weren't great, it felt like he had more chance to succeed on the left side for me. It also felt like a weird evaluation because I also saw some of the stuff that you saw in terms of a bull rush. And so I started to wonder, can he move inside? Can he go inside and play? So he's a strange evaluation because his pass protection, it felt like it was really clouded by that dominant hand issue. And how is he going to succeed best at the next level? I felt like it would be on the left side where his inside hand is his right hand, and he can use that. Now, that might be a tackle. It might be a guard. The thing I loved about Savainaya, and you can't not love, is his ability as a run blocker, as you touched on just as you mentioned really, really well. You know, he just... I'll mention this with another guy in a second, actually, but the thing I really liked about him is that if any of you have listened to me before, I studied at the Scouting Academy, and one of the best things the Scouting Academy did was they recorded Howard Mudd talking about what he looks for in an offensive lineman for like an hour and a half. And it's fantastic to listen to. And one of the things that stuck with me from that was that he said he's looking for the difference. There's a spectrum between a pusher and a guy who's just a mass running into people and a guy who can get to a defender and uncoil all his leverage and is has explosive power and strength. And he's looking for where you are on that spectrum. And for me, Savainaya is towards the explosive power end of the spectrum. Not all the way there, and certainly not on this draft class, the most furthest on the way there. But you saw it on lots of occasions. And, you know, he was a guy who at the second level wasn't expending all his energy to get to a guy and then just not being able to fit and finish a block. He's a guy who's getting there more comfortably, and he's really uncoiling his leverage. And so I really liked some of that from him, where he's sort of snapping into contact at second level. And obviously I think he's really good in terms of run blocking big dudes across from him in the gap game. So for me, he's a guy that I think he's exactly what the Ravens will look for in terms of his athletic ability, in terms of his how scheme diverse he is as a run blocker. Like, I think he's a really interesting guy. I think there is a real chance that he could play inside. But I as I went through the evaluation, I just kept thinking, why not kept in my head. Why can't he play? Why is this felt like an evaluation of an offensive lineman that I think could probably play left tackle or left guard. I don't think you're enhancing any of his strengths inside or outside. I don't think you're hiding any of his weaknesses inside or outside. I think he's a good offensive lineman that could probably play both. And you know, you should sort of evaluate him that way.
Well, if he can play left tackle, then he's going to stay at left tackle. So it's one of the golden rules of his, you get the most economical value out of the player. All right. You had him at number six, you said?
Yeah.
All right. I'll go ahead then go on to my number six guy, who is Ariante Ursary of Minnesota. A guy I really like. We may be divided on him again. Another guy who could possibly end up moving to guard. He's 6'6", 331, 33, and an 8-inch arm. So he turned 21 in March. So he's one of the younger guys in this entire group. He had good jumps. That's generally good for explosion, and a really good 40. All of his other testing was average, but those things are probably the most important. Despite the quick foot speed, I found him to be ponderously slow out of his stance, which is probably the single biggest problem I had with the guy. Is even going, which is this is really unusual, going forward, he was so concerned about not false starting that he would be always or just regularly the last man out of that Minnesota offensive line to move. And the guy I kind of remember doing this, it was really more on the defensive side of the ball, is Juwan Edwards early in his career with the Ravens, was a guy who was just always awfully slow out of his stance. There's stories that go with that, but anyway, he's one of few players who basically has whined about what I've written about him to other people, along with Kamalai Correa's mother and some other people that have come up over the years. There's some good stories that go with that, but anyway, very slow out of his stance. I thought that his hand usage can suffer because of that. It's more of a problem really in the run game, but even in the pass game, and even when he's in a true pass set, he still can be a little bit late getting kicked out and getting ready to make that block. He was beaten inside several times by Abdul Carter where the cone was infringed. And they weren't times necessarily where Carter got to the quarterback, but there were times where he was pushing him, pulling him back into that cone and making making the Minnesota quarterback uncomfortable in that. Good first step, good mirror otherwise, I thought. He knows when he has to bail out and block 12 to 6. So I think he's been pretty good with that. He's very nasty. He drops his weight on top of opposing players anytime he gets a pancake in the pass game. Just love to see that. Really love to see that. So he's one of those guys. Another guy who's a little bit vulnerable to overreaction to the outside and what that means inside. Abdul Carter also got him a couple of times that way where his pressures were outside half man moves that he then came to the inside and got him. He doesn't have elite stunt twist blitz pickup skills like Josh Connerly say does. He'll be a project there, but again, this is a case in Ursary and Connerly are at opposite ends, and Trapillo is probably at the opposite end too. As players who still have a fair amount of growth left to do, I think Ursary is among those. I think they can figure out how to get him out of his stance a little quicker. And I say that knowing that it hasn't necessarily worked out for Adafi Owe, for example, on the defensive side. I think they have a better chance with an offensive lineman to come up with ways to get him out more quickly. Good combination blocking. Senses the off balance of the defensive end. I think of the guys in this class, he might be the best at timing his release from the line of scrimmage. So if he's the guy responsible for the down blocking push on a DT, then he will typically get that guy off balance. He knows he's off balance. He moves up. He doesn't try and finish the block. And I was pretty impressed with that in the times we saw that. He's plenty quick enough to handle zone responsibilities as I see it. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. The Ravens have not taken a lot of chances on short-armed offensive tackles. Michael Orr was the last one. That really didn't work out. But Ursary is a player that I could see playing right tackle in 2025. So we're back to your point earlier about needing to make a gamble on Rosengarten being able to jump into the next level and play left tackle. If you draft Ursary, that is one of the things you have to decide on. He would be a late round two. He'd be an outstanding value in round three if they could get him there. There's no chance he lasts to number 91. So he'll be gone somewhere between 59 and 91. And I think if they could trade back out of that round two pick and get him at about 70 or something, I'd be thrilled with it. If they got him at 91, it'd be one of the, it probably would be the biggest single coup of the draft, more than likely if they got him at that point. Anyway, that's my thoughts.
Cool. So he's my number five. So again, we're one step ahead. So Ursary for me, I think I would have him at 59. So I'd be pretty happy with that. I think so for me, I really like Ursary. And I think the thing I would say is with Ursary, he's I mentioned that spectrum before about explosive power, and I get that's a little bit alluring for me. I end up looking for it a bit. I feel he's a little bit further on the spectrum than even Savainaya, in terms of the explosive power. He reminded me a little bit from that perspective of Tyler Smith, who came out a few years ago. Ursary 100% has a lot of developing to do. But for me, I feel like there is, there's a ceiling there that I really like with Ursary. And so that's why I have him a little bit higher. Worth mentioning here, I think Ursary is one of the guys, so it's worth mentioning that I wrote Ursary's report up reasonably early on in the process when we had the senior ball measurements. And it's worth mentioning here that if anybody hasn't seen, there's a huge discrepancy between the senior ball measurements and the combine measurements this year. And Ursary was one of those guys.
So is this in the testing or in something like arm length?
In the arm length measurement.
Oh my God.
At the senior bowl, Ursary measured 34 inch arms at the senior bowl, whereas at the combine, he was 33 1/8. So it's quite a big difference. And there's a few guys like that where they just measured really very different. And Ursary was one of those guys where that data point was quite helpful for me when I saw it at the senior bowl, and then sort of changed my viewpoint when I started the combine. Sorry, Ken, go ahead.
Was there a uniformity to the direction of the longer measurement?
So no, absolutely not. It went different ways. So it's very strange. Apparently it's the same guys. It's the same agency at both the combine and the senior bowl and the shrine bowl. So very strange that ended up happening. So Ursary's a bit of there's a few of those guys that I had noted down actually. So, I mean, we've not got to all of them yet, but Josh Simmons was an inch who we haven't got to. He was an inch shorter at the combine. Savainaya was also shorter. There's a few guys on the other spectrum other way as well. So it was a very straight, Carson Vinson was longer at the senior bowl than he was at the combine. So very strange that all happened, but anyway, Ursary is somewhere between 33 and 34 inches arms.
We have to cut this off here now because we're going to do a second part of the show and continue our countdown from 5 to 1 here. But James, just an absolute pleasure talking through this with you. There's nobody I rather enjoy talking football with than you, and this is in terms of having somebody else who really appreciates offensive line play and knows a lot about it, has the background you do with the Scouting Academy, just really appreciate this conversation. Tell people where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, you can find me on X and NFL Ogden. I'm hoping to at some point get on Blue Sky as well, because it appears that that's the place to be now for the more refined football content. You can also hear me talking on podcasts regularly on the UK Ravens podcast. I occasionally write for Russell Street Report, and you've now got in about 2-3 weeks my draft guide that is for the NFL draft that is focused for Ravens fans. So it does a full report on lots of players and gives you an idea of where I think they fit from a Ravens perspective. And that's coming out in a couple of weeks, and you'll be able to find that. I'll link to it on my socials when it comes out.
Outstanding, James. Other folks out there, the big thing we're trying to plug right now is make sure you join us for the draft watch party. Okay, so this is a lot of fun. We have panelists that really know their stuff, and we talk and we gripe among each other about picks, and we talk about the value and whatnot that's happening. But the big thing we do now is we use a spreadsheet approach and a list of players by position group, and we try and figure out who's going to be drafted next. So it's very interactive, and it's 100% from the viewpoint of how does this pick impact the Baltimore Ravens? We do not care about the Cincinnati Bengals. We're not looking for any kind of a human interest story to, why Carson Palmer's cat is interesting because he's the number one overall pick. None of that crap. So it's all just focused on the Ravens, who's their next pick. And with 11 picks, it's going to be a fun day. One, day two, and day three in particular, where they have 8 of their selections on that. And James, I hope you'll join us for a part of that. I don't know when you have time or if you've got a UK Ravens thing going on, but I certainly hope you have time to make it for some of that. We'll talk after the show about that. James, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Cam.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. We'll be right back.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.